Welcome, listeners, to the Stories, Fables, Ghostly Tales podcast. This week's theme is all about love, because it's Valentine's, and this means love, but in the most twisted and deliciously evil way possible, naturally. And I've been given permission to read this week's story from a book written by some of my favorite No Sleep authors, such as Tobias Wade and Jesse Clark. The book is titled Love, Death, and Other Inconveniences, Horror Stories of Love and Loss. Entirely appropriate for this week. Now, if you get a chance, visit their Amazon page and support them if possible. There's a whopping 32 stories from a multitude of different authors, and I'll be reading as many of these stories as I can to entice you to grab a copy. It's $9.60 on Amazon, and it'll help new authors get a foothold. And besides telling creepy stories, this platform is all about bringing authors to the forefront. So I wanted to give them a shout out. And hopefully some of you awesome listeners can check the book out and buy a copy of your own, which is the best way to tell these authors, keep on doing what you're doing. So, today I have three stories by Tobias Wade, titled In Love with the Devil's Wife, Letters from My Dead Wife, and Redefining Love. Now, turn those lights off, the sound up, and get ready for something different. The devil is known for his patience. He will see a ripening sin in our youth and wait all the long years of our life before the harvest. And why shouldn't he? What is one more soul to the untold billions in his domain? What is one more year in the infinite span of his corrupted reign? Perhaps, by waiting, he is even giving us the chance to spend our lives repenting for what we've done. But I wouldn't know. Sins such as mine are so terrible that no absolution is possible. So, I suppose there was no reason for him to wait. He came for me in the woods, while the mutilated woman I killed was still in my arms, warming my body with her blood. It's strange that I cannot remember why I killed her, or even who she is. But this feeling of guilt so permeates my being that I would have walked to hell myself if I had but known the way. I will not waste effort describing the devil. The impoverished words at my disposal have only been designed for this material world. Even as he stood before me, he was more removed from my understanding than the glorious sun was to a blind worm. It is suffice to say that he could not be perceived with any one sense, but the pressure of his presence so commanded my consciousness that I was aware of nothing else. Escape was impossible. Words were meaningless. I let the woman slip from my arms and stood to face him with all the dignity remaining to a man so removed from God. When he turned from me and began to walk through the fading light of this dying world, I kept pace with him and did not turn to either side. Where we walked, I do not know, but it seemed as though I could have relived my entire life in the time it took for him to stop. As long as he was beside me, I could not make sense of what else might be. Even the thoughts in my head and the temperature on my skin were insignificant to his companionship. As terrifying as it was to know my fate, I had found certain tranquility in the mindless journey at his side. Now that I could feel him beginning to depart, however, my mind revolted, as though starting from a nightmare. I forced out the first thought I could muster to delay his departure. Who was she?
You will suffer more if you do not know.
And he was gone. And with him, the curtain lifted within me to reveal the horror of his empire I now found myself mired within. Perhaps it would be more accurate to call hell a person than a place, however. Considering the unceasing sentient screams which pummeled me from the land itself, writhing shadows, sensitive to the touch, grasping endlessly at me with hands that were not hands, endless cities sprawled before me as open wounds upon the rotting corpses I stood upon. The sky was unobstructed by stars, instead vaulting endlessly into a timeless abyss. And looking at it, I experienced the ghastly sensation of balancing on an eroding precipice which poised to tumble me endlessly into its yawning void. Charnel winds slithered their way into my nose and mouth with tangible substance, forcing me to let out oiled coils like a writhing serpent penetrate my lungs with each breath. Beyond the city, in the distance, rose the obscured ghosts of monstrous beings and gods who roared in endless decay, which fate had forgotten them to. Through this blasphemous temple, to the end of the universe I went, cowed constantly by half-conceived winged terrors which beat the air with a sound like the ceaseless wet bludgeoning of fists on flesh. There are two kinds of pain which I had come to expect from the world of the living, the physical and the emotional. Never had I experienced a physical pain so excruciating as the boils which began to swell across my body, nor a mental burden as debilitating as the taunting echoes which sneered at me from the living tissue beneath my feet. Every good memory of my life was poisoned against me, and each shame and guilt was magnified 1,000 times over by the leering spectres which narrated my ordeals with intimate knowledge and exaggerated effect. Worse than either was the spiritual pain I endured, however, the gnawing, hopeless depression which robbed even my sense of self. I was not a person in hell. I was hell. I did not feel pain. I was pain, inseparable and indistinguishable. It was then, in the lowest reduction of my humanity, as I crawled across the putrid ground in a trail of my own ruptured boils, that she took pity on me. Gentle hands shed my skin from me, not as a torment, but a release. My disfigured limbs were cut away by her flashing knife, each slice bringing a pain so pure and clean that I welcomed it without question. Layer by layer she flayed me, until at last there was nothing left to cut but my soul. Again, it is difficult to describe her without the reliance of my mortal senses now stripped from me. But if you understood me, that I told you I was in pain, you will understand again when I tell you she was beauty.
My husband was wrong about you, she told me. You didn't kill anyone, and you don't deserve to be here. I'm going to help you escape.
I couldn't comprehend how anything could exist outside of this. What universe would accept me, torn and broken as I was? What universe could I accept, knowing it had the capacity to so punish an innocent soul?
I don't deserve it,
what's left of me replied.
I know I killed her. It's something you can never cut from me.
She killed herself by loving you, and for that, you are not to blame. Do you see these hands?
When she cupped my hands in her own, I knew that she was creating them as she spoke. Clean, strong hands, untouched by the blemishes of hell.
These hands could never be used for hurt. These eyes could never look upon such evil as its own creation.
I didn't even have a face before she spoke, but my entire body was growing with each word. It was as though the seed of my soul was sprouting new life. Shards of bone lanced out and flourished with muscle like thickening bark. Organs dropped and swelled like ripening fruit, and the network of veins and arteries blossomed toward her as though seeking nourishment from the sun. Through the macabre landscapes we sped, dancing across the festering world as softly as light through a drop of water. I could see her more clearly the further we traversed, although she never stayed still long enough for me to get a proper look. Bare feet skipped across the rotten land and twirled her through the looming spectres which besought us on all sides. It is a wonder that the oppression of this unending night had failed to extinguish her spark, and invigorated by the purity of her wake, I was whole again.
You are his wife, then?
It was difficult to speak to her as we raced, but I managed to slip in a few words every time I was able to draw near.
We are bound to each other.
Yes, she replied. And then she was gone again, leaping fearlessly between fragile grips as she vaulted upward. I followed her up the tortuous, broken hand the size of a hillside, which stretched vainly from the ground toward the vacuous sky.
Of all the madness in this cursed place, that must king.
My husband is not mad, and neither am I for being with him,
she replied. She was pulling herself up through the fingers now, stopping to wait for me atop one of the monstrous joints.
And if I were to love you instead, I asked, would that be mad as well?
She smiled at me and stretched her slender hand to help me clamber up beside her. We sat together, staring upward from the bottom of an endless sky. The slightest brush of her leg against my own intoxicating me with rapture.
All love is paradoxically mad, she replied. It is an assault on reason, but in doing so it creates its own reason. But it won't do you any good, because this is where you have to leave.
And you? Will you leave with me?
She shook her head.
You cannot prefer to stay here.
She nodded, saying,
but you are free now, and that is what matters. All you must do is jump from this point, and with the body I have given you, you will be able to fall all the way back up until you've left hell, all together.
I've already left hell, I said, since the moment you found me. And if I were to leave you here, then I know wherever I found myself would be hell again without you there.
You're being silly and wasting time. If my husband finds you with me...
He won't, because you're coming with me.
I cut her off, preferring not to dwell on the thought of being found.
I can't. I've made a promise,
she began.
Then I can't either, and that's my promise to you.
To prove my point, I even slipped down from the finger we sat upon and began crawling back toward the massive palm.
Stop it! If he finds you, he'll...
He'll what?
I shouted back.
What can he possibly do that he hasn't done already?
I saw in her something I could not live without, and she must have seen something in me which she could not let die. I hadn't even made it to the giant palm before her hands clasped me,
and heaved me back onto the twisted finger. We stood there for a long while together, hand in hand, staring up at the terrifying fall. Then the wet, bludgeoning drums of the winged creatures began, and I could feel the tension wash through her body. I watched her, although she could not meet my gaze, and just as the drumming began to close in around us, I felt her coil to leap. We jumped together, flying and falling simultaneously in a dizzying tumble as we began to depart, but it was too slow to prevent our liberation. The entire world screamed with more agony than could be contained. But though the land reverberated with its echoes, even this deafening cacophony was quickly falling behind. The gut-clenching freefall distracted my attention, but I never let go of her hand as we whirled through the timeless void. It wasn't until the initial exhilaration began to fade when I could tell that something was wrong. I didn't have to look at her to feel her hand withering in my grasp, her skin wrinkled and dried, as though years of heartbeat into it with every second we passed together. Soon, she had begun to crack and bleed, washing me with her warm blood. While I still felt healthy and strong, I was forced to watch with helpless terror as her body was devastated by the passage through the void. Her smooth hair began to mold and fall free in greasy clumps. Her face was torn as though blasted by relentless sand, and though her fingers clutched onto me ever more desperately, I could feel the strength fleeing from them. No torment in hell could match the guilt of knowing she was enduring this for me. As the spinning abyss began to slow, I was able to swim through the air and clutch her to me, cradling her in my arms as her body continued to deteriorate. Blood was now flowing freely from 1,000 sourceless wounds, when finally the black sky relinquished us back into the woods where I began. I was soaked in her blood and my own freely falling tears. Staring at her mutilated form, she was completely unrecognizable from before. My head was clouded as though freshly waking from a dream, and though I tried to hold on to the details, they were stolen from me with inexorable decay. Soon, I could not even remember who I was holding or how she had gotten there. All I knew was that it was my fault, and the weight of the guilt which her death bade me carry. When the devil came for me again, I knew I would follow him willingly. No matter what horror lay in store for me, I knew I deserved it for what I had done. And this concludes the first story in Love with the Devil's Wife. On to our next. The worst night of my life wasn't the night of my wife's death. The worst night was every night since. I barely remember the actual accident. The phone call that sounded like a foreign language, swerving in and out of traffic on the way to the hospital. The surreal fluorescent light in that timeless waiting room. It's nothing but a blur. All I remember afterward was the surgeon who couldn't make eye contact with me, then sitting in my driveway for an hour and staring at the dark windows of my house. It was a dream, almost like it was happening to someone else, like it could only happen to someone else because I couldn't understand how my life was supposed to keep going without her. People keep telling me that things will get easier with time. The longer I wait, the more letters she writes, though. And I don't know how much longer I can hold it together. I recognized her handwriting immediately when the first one appeared. She'd written my name on the outside of a folded yellow paper which had been unceremoniously buried under a stack of junk mail. Inside, all it said was,
It's so quiet, but I can still hear you breathing. It's so dark, but nothing is hidden from me. Did we both die that night? Love, M. Cleanly printed in the same handwriting. December 12th. The date of her accident. It doesn't hurt if that's what you're wondering. She wrote in a second letter, which arrived a few days later. Not how things used to hurt anyway. Before, when something hurts, you try to get away from it. Pull your hand away from the sharp stick. Spit out the boiling tea. Now, pain feels more like being alive. When will you join me? I know you must be thinking about me because I can feel your thoughts race through my body like electricity in my veins. It gives me the strength to hold on. So I hope it never stops hurting. Is that how it feels for you too? Love, M. The written date was December 12th again, frozen in time. I stole from death each time I read and reread those precious words. If pain was all she needed to feed, then she would never go hungry with me. People have begun to disappear. Not all at once, but details and features keep slipping away. Until I can't even remember their names. Sometimes I call to the doctor and not notice until he turns around that he doesn't have a face. Conversations will sound normal in the background, but if I really focus, I realize that the words are just random sounds that don't make any sense to me. And the smell? Boiled eggs, festering meat, rot, and must so thick. I can feel it trickling down my throat when I breathe. It doesn't matter where I go. The smell is always the same. If you haven't smelled a flower today, do it now for both of us. What's it like? I can't seem to remember anymore. Love, M. You probably think I'm going crazy, don't you? I must be crazy for wanting to hold on to the comfort of this illusionary connection. It wasn't the letters that were driving me crazy, though. It was the smell which began to linger everywhere I went. Spoiled eggs and festering meat were gentle words for the relentlessly condensing atmosphere. From the moment I woke up, air as thick as oil began slithering into my lungs. I'd wash myself with a rough sponge until my skin was bright and raw, and burned incense night and day. But nothing ever cleared the vile intrusion of my senses. Coats and hats are walking around without people in them. Whole neighborhoods are simply gone, replaced with a random clutter of empty buildings and blank earth. It's as though I've forgotten what goes there. But somehow my mind is desperately trying to cover up its own errors with a hodgepodge of things it steals from other memories. Every day, the world becomes more could be and less is. I'll forget them if I have to. I'll forget where I was born and where I went to school. I'll forget all the places I've gone and the people I've known. I'll forget my own name. I don't care. As long as you keep reading these, then at least you'll remember. As long as I keep writing them, please don't let me forget you too. Love, M. The smell is getting worse. I didn't think it was possible, but I can't even breathe without gagging. I haven't left the house in 3 days, so I don't know if I'm the only one who notices. Everything I eat mushes into decay in my mouth and I can't sleep at night. I just lie awake, thinking about what the next letter will say. You did this to me. I don't know why or how, but I'm trapped here because of you. The light that bleeds from your eyes is blinding me. Your thoughts are so loud that I can't hear myself think. Why does your house line every street on every block in the city? Why does your face peer from behind every door? Why does it make me sad when you look through me and turn away? M. The space between life and death had never been so thin. Tenebrious silhouettes are always squirming in my peripheral vision these days. Shadows behind furniture linger for a full second after the light has been turned on. I hear footsteps in empty rooms, and I'm positive that I've closed more doors than I've opened. Then, late at night, when I'm lying awake in bed, I'll hear them open again. And always, always the pervading rot, so real and present that I need to constantly check myself to make sure I'm not the one who is decomposing. That's the only explanation that makes sense to me. Knowing that she's rotting while I must endure, it's killing me. I didn't think she understood that until the next letter. When you're gone, there won't be anything left to keep me here. M. If I thought putting a bullet in my brain would have helped her move on, then someone would have been scrubbing my brains off the wall by now. I just don't see how something as measly as a bullet is going to make me let her go. Or maybe I'm a coward and that's just an excuse. I couldn't go on living like this, but maybe there was something in me that wanted to keep her living somehow. I went for a walk that night, but I couldn't find cleaner air anywhere, not even in the cemetery where she was buried. It's odd, because I distinctly remember thinking how pure it felt here during her funeral. The whole world is painted in shades of grey, but graveyards are only white and black. The smell only grew stronger while I was digging. The laminated casket was harder to break than I expected, but I wasn't in a rush. The enduring rhythm of my shovel pummeling the lock was like the heartbeat of this place, and the pain which drove the blade was its blood. Between my pain and the lock proved less enduring. There was a sheet of blue velvet covering her body, but I didn't need to see her as I poured the gasoline on top. The wretched odor will burn clean. Her rotting mind will burn clean. I emptied the whole gallon of gasoline and tossed the match. Not exactly how I imagined saying goodbye, but there was something cathartic about watching the flames rise from the gutted earth. As long as there was a body, I couldn't shake the feeling that she was that body. Now she was the smoke and the sky and all the vastness of space. Now she was free. That's why I didn't expect a final letter waiting for me when I got home in the early hours of the morning. Profane desecration. The defiler will burn. M. The shadows don't have the decency to hide their intent anymore. The doors don't wait until I've left the room before they taunt me with their opening. More worrying still are the doors that won't open even when they're unlocked. And the sparks which have begun to breathe smokeless from the electrical sockets. Whatever remains of my wife isn't my wife anymore. She doesn't even remember me. But I hope she recognizes me when we're together again soon. And this concludes our second story by Tobias Wade. And now, on to our next story.
I didn't believe that stars were real when I was a little girl growing up in New York. My parents told me they were drowned out by the city lights, but that didn't seem possible. It just didn't make sense how something that big could be completely invisible. What was the big deal anyway, if they were duller than ordinary light bulbs? I was 7 years old before I took a trip to the country and saw the endless heavens for the first time. One by one, little beads of light began sneaking through the dusk.
"Those are planes,"
I declared, righteously. My parents only smiled. The stars kept coming, hundreds, thousands, webs and clusters miraculously bursting out of nowhere as though they were being created just for me. I remember laughing out loud and flinging myself into the air, rushing to climb the tallest tree just to stretch a little bit closer. It doesn't matter if I couldn't reach them. It didn't even matter if I never saw them again. I knew they existed, now and forever, hiding there watching over me. And I swore, with all the ferocity of a 7-year-old's swelling heart, that I'd never love anything less than this feeling for the rest of my life. That is what first love is like. Feeling the world change overnight. Nothing into something, leaving you a helpless bystander while it rewrites everything about who you are and the reality you live in. I was in 6th grade when I looked at a boy like that for the first time. We were hugging out of excitement for the last day before summer break when he snuck in a kiss, smiling sheepishly at me while the whole class cheered and laughed at the scandal. I thought I suddenly understood what love meant. That was it for me, I decided. I knew how to love now, and I never needed to learn again. How could I have known that love meant something new with every passing year? I didn't understand the anxiety, the jealousy, the doubt, or the soul-crushing rejection that would prove to be inseparable from such wonder. After all, the stars have gone, smothered beneath the fury of the inevitable sun. It's impossible to believe what fool could dream such a thing to be. High school, college, 20s and 30s, excitement before disappointment, hope before regret. They come and go, tugging and pulling at the heart, but not like they used to. They weren't the first and they would not be the last. My 40s passed, then 50s, the frenzied march of years convincing me that I was too busy to waste time looking at empty sky. Then I met Jason. And I knew what I had been missing all this time. I'd been wanted before, but I'd never been needed. Jason was already dying from cancer when we met. He'd given up, just like me. He thought he was going to die alone, just like me. I could feel the urgency of his hands like electricity on my skin. The desperation in his eyes when he confessed his feelings for me. It was intoxicating. I cared for him through every laborious step of his treatment. I'd lay blankets down on the hard bathroom floor and set up his laptop on the toilet tank. We'd sit together, watching his favorite musicals for hours, until he'd vomited himself dry. Even when his face was plastered with sweat, his bloody gums would still flash a smile when I sang along. Some days, Jason would be strong enough to walk outside or play his guitar. He was a fantastic musician, and when he got going, his husky dog would start wagging and howling along to the tune. I laughed so hard and loved so deep in those moments that they became frozen in time. Even his death couldn't steal this from me. He cried together as he called his family and told them his time was running out. His pain was my pain, his love, my love, and despite the ordeal, I can never remember being so happy. Then came the news. The chemo was successful. The cancer went into remission. We'd
One. Love means fighting for someone. I understand that now. Not letting go. Not giving up. Holding on like you'll drown without them. It wasn't easy. But what worth having is. We didn't see each other as often now that he was able to return to work. We fought more, but we always made up. He cheated, but I forgave him. Love survives. Love endures. And the more I struggled to be happy with that man, the more I refused to accept how much of myself I'd wasted if he were to leave. Jason knew that his remission wouldn't last forever, though. When he started getting sick again, he remembered how much he needed me. He was too tired to go back for another round of treatment and keep fighting, but it wouldn't have helped even if he had. The arsenic in his food isn't going to kill him, not at the levels I use. It's just enough to remind him that he needs me, and that I need him. That's what it means to love. These were the blackest days of his despair, but at least he didn't have to suffer alone. Jason was shaking terribly all the time now, except when he lay so pale and still that I had to keep checking for breath. He was too weak to leave the house on his own, but he didn't put up much resistance when I decided to take him for a drive. I brought him out to the country where my parents took me all those years ago, and we laid side by side under the brilliance of an eternal sky. It's the same sky my 7-year-old heart went wild for, and after all this time, I finally realize that it's the same love I felt too. Love stayed the same while I changed around it. But I was finished now. Jason had made me into who I was meant to be. I hadn't counted on that little expedition giving him so much hope. He started making a fuss about going back to the hospital to start his treatments again. But I knew that would only end in unhappiness for us both. I kept making excuses why I couldn't take him. I thought he'd be too tired to keep pushing and give up sooner or later. But then I caught him trying to make an appointment behind my back. I had to increase the dose of his arsenic up to 75 milligrams a day. Still, half the lethal dose for someone his size. It was enough to make him too blind to drive, which at least bought me some more time to explain how he wasn't thinking straight. I didn't expect Jason to take a taxi to his appointment. I thought he trusted me to know what was best for him. When I got home to the empty house, I knew things were going to get rough from here. As soon as the test came back, a few days at the longest, they were going to tell him that his cancer was still in remission. He might even find out what I was doing. He wouldn't understand why I did it though, and he'd hate me forever. I had no choice but to lock him in his room as soon as he got home. I took away all his phones and devices so he couldn't find out the truth. I'd sit with him and we'd watch his shows and I'd sing to him like we used to. But it wasn't the same anymore. He couldn't overpower me physically, but like the manipulative man he can sometimes be, Jason resorted to begging and pleading. I had to increase his dose again just to get him to shut up. Too much arsenic? And I might as well be having a date with a body pillow. Too little. And he'd start asking questions that I couldn't answer. I found the right dose eventually though, and it would have been almost perfect except that the dog was howling all the time now. We were so happy until Jason caught me. It was that stupid dog's fault. Barking and carrying on, making me chase it all over the house before I could get it to shut up. Jason wasn't in the room when I got back. He'd made it all the way to the kitchen, almost to the back door before... "What's this?" he asked,
the bottle that made our love possible in his trembling hands. Medicine, go back to bed. You're not well enough to... But he wouldn't listen. I don't know if he could even read the label, but I think somewhere deep inside, he already knew what was going on. Even if it was just unconsciously, he wanted to stay sick. He wanted to be taken care of, but he had a temper. And now that he knew for sure, he was too stubborn to ever let it go. You're insane. You're absolutely insane, Jason shouted. He was running through the kitchen blind, smashing into cabinets and flailing through the hanging pots. He was acting so crazy that I think some of the arsenic must have gotten into his brain. It was just too stressful. He was screaming. I was screaming. The dog was going wild again, barking and snarling and bristling up. Somehow, Jason managed to get a knife in his hand, but he wasn't strong enough to hold on to it. I was sobbing when I pinned him to the floor. I didn't know what to do. There aren't instructions to love. There isn't right or wrong. There's just happiness and unhappiness. And it broke my heart that he didn't want to be happy with me anymore. At this point, it would be easier if he were dead and couldn't disturb the frozen memories where everything was still perfect. I didn't want to, but love sometimes means doing what is hard. I could feel that desperate energy radiating from his hands, locked around my wrists again, almost like when we first met. But I was stronger. I forced the knife lower inch by excruciating inch until the blade was right up against his throat. I still don't know if I could have done it, but at least my intentions were good. The dog got me by the back of my neck first. I'd never seen him bite anyone before, but he had me good and dragged me all the way across the tile floor. I think I grazed it with a knife a few times, but the beast just clamped down harder and pinned me down until I heard the kitchen door slam. The sky has never felt so empty. I let the dog follow its master without taking my revenge, and I'm completely alone now. I haven't seen either of them for over a week, and I don't expect I will again. I'm not going to pretend that I didn't make mistakes. A lifetime of learning about love. But somehow, I still know less than when I saw the stars for the first time all those years ago. That's what life is, though. Making mistakes, getting hurt, learning and trying again. For me, that meant buying rope. For next time. Tobias Wade. Lovely listeners. He has a Wade with words. Does that one work? Might be a stretch. Okay. But what a writer. The great skill that Tobias has when writing his stories is that he's like a thesaurus. The retinue of words and the command he has in their use really inspires me as a storyteller. The first story is so very unique. The second story is disturbing on so many levels. And the last story is just crazy. Which one was your favorite? I really enjoyed all of them, but I gotta say my absolute favorite one would be the very first one, about loving the devil's wife. But I'd love to hear what you think. Also, these Valentine's episodes are unique in that I'll be uploading each one to YouTube the very day that I record them. So it's going to be really interesting and a jam-packed week for me, to say the least. But it's going to be fun. Stay tuned for tomorrow's Valentine's episode. And if you have a second, check out the episode notes where you can find love, death, and other inconveniences. But for now, it is that time.
I wonder if anyone knows this off by heart. This is the place where stories live, and you tale tellers come to listen. Enjoy your day or night, and join me every weekday for our creepy tradition. And as always, till next time.